Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast.
Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Today it is just Mom and I sitting out in her little cottage. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Elizabeth.
And we just get to, I know we've alluded a lot on the podcast to Mom's story and the book that she wrote that I'm just going to tell you about before I forget. It's called He Speaks in the Silence, Finding Intimacy with God by Learning to Listen. And we'll link that in the show notes. But obviously, to write a book like that, there's a story behind it. Mm-hmm. And there's a life message that has been birthed in you that has been turned into a book, which is amazing. But we've never actually asked you questions and given you a chance to share your story. And obviously, I've lived it with you, and it's been so incredibly powerful in my own life and in so many people's lives all around the world. Now, your book's been translated into what, German
and Korean?
Yes. Uh-huh. I'm actually looking at your office right now. I can see the Korean books up at the top, and maybe next to the German one. I don't know. I can't read those languages.
Yeah.
So I'm excited that you get to share this with everyone listening. So we just want to jump right in. So what a lot of you don't know is that, Mom, you are actually 100% deaf.
Exactly. No, no actual sound goes through, penetrates my hearing. None at all.
Yeah. But it wasn't always that way.
No.
So you weren't born that way. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen suddenly, which actually in some ways would have been easier.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about that. Take us back to right before all of that.
Well, I was 26 years old, and I married young, had children young. And so at 26, I already had three children when I turned 26. And I had in my third pregnancy, I was carrying you, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
I had gotten just a really mild case of pneumonia, and they did have to use some powerful drugs to stop the coughing that was just, you know, kind of crazy and hard. And so for reasons that we don't understand, possibly autoimmune response to the virus of pneumonia, or possibly the drugs that were used, it seemed to have set off a hearing loss. So all I knew is that I had a newborn baby, and it just seemed like everybody was muttering and mumbling, and the phones weren't working very well, which back then they had just turned it into more of a private enterprise. Before that, the government had run the phone company. So I thought, okay, it's just the quality has gone down.
Yeah.
And Phil's muttering all the time. And it was everybody but me. I didn't actually think that I was losing my hearing, or that I had a hearing loss.
Yeah, why would you? I mean,
but people kept telling me in my family something isn't right. And so at their insistence, actually, I was at my mom's house one day having a cup of coffee, and she threatened to call the doctor for me if I didn't.
It's a good mom, right?
So I was
right
in
there.
Total, yeah, you can imagine your grandma. Mm-hmm. I was in total denial and thought it was a complete waste of my time to be leaving a nursing baby, nursing newborn, and going to the doctor to have my ears tested. But by the end of an appointment that ended up being almost 3 hours long, I was diagnosed with what was probably a progressive neural hearing loss. In other words, the nerve, there was nothing wrong with my ears, but the nerve that allows your brain to pick up the information that your ear gives it was disintegrating. Mm. And it's not as rare as you might think, although I've met very few people with it. I can't remember what the statistics are, but it wasn't shocking to them. They had seen this before. And it usually happens, if it's going to happen, it usually happens in childhood or young adulthood. So, I went home from that knowing that already there was looming over me the possibility of completely losing my hearing. So it really set me in a spiral of despair and suffering that is part of that story.
Yeah.
Over the years, though, I did eventually completely lose my hearing. Probably by 30, I was functioning as a deaf person in that even with the biggest hearing aids possible, I couldn't really be part of a conversation, say, around a table at a restaurant.
No, yeah. And hearing aids weren't what they are today.
No.
In that they just were like microphones. They just amplified everything.
Yes.
And what most people don't know is when you lose your hearing, you don't lose all frequencies at one time. You might hear fine in the low frequencies, but hear none of the mid-ranges or high frequencies. So if you have a hearing aid, just amplifying everything.
And they
were miserable
try,
to wear.
Yes,
yeah.
They were. And they fed back. If somebody
every time
hugged
you hugged, we'd say, you're ringing, Mom, you're ringing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
what was, you know, you find out this piece of information, you've got a bunch of little kids at home, you probably don't have, you're a pastor's wife, so you're supposed to just be happy all the time and God is good all the time, and you haven't experienced suffering, really.
No.
Not in this capacity.
No.
And you go home with this information with no one able to tell you what this is going to become. Are you going to go 100% deaf? Mm-hmm. How fast are you going to lose your hearing? Are you going to hear your baby cry?
Mm-hmm.
What was your like first initial response in the first, you know, year, two, three after that?
Going home, I just erupted in tears.
Yeah.
Grieved deeply. For about maybe let myself do that for about an hour, maybe a little bit in the middle of the night. I remember getting up with you to nurse you in the middle of the night and really breaking down enough that your dad got out of bed and came in to see what was going on and couldn't console me. I mean, inconsolable, terrified. I'd say fear was probably my first emotion. And then the ramifications of the future, you just can't help but get hit by the ramifications, because the doctors were really, I appreciate this so much, were honest with me from the start that this would likely be progressive.
Yeah.
And in other words, it would keep going.
Mm-hmm.
But they had no idea, you know, how fast it would keep going. So my first response was grief, but boy, I buttoned that up almost immediately.
Mm.
So by the time I was letting other people who are close to me in my life know about it, I had fixed the pastor's wife's smile on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the 80s was famous in churches and in Christianity for everything had a happy ending.
Yeah.
You know, even in the worship and the singing was all ended on a high note.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I fixed my high note on it publicly. And tried to believe what I was telling other people, but inside I just began to sink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what did that look like? I mean, were you consciously aware that that was happening? Or was it more just kind of this subconscious growing more and more distant internally or angry? How did that
come
out?
For me, I think it came out in anger, which is often the case for me. Fear turns quickly into anger. For me, it mostly came out in anger at God. Because the picture that I'd been painted, or at least that I'd seen of God, was of a God who would take care of me.
Yeah.
That as long as I played the good girl role, if I did what was right and good, and I didn't do the bad things, that that would give me some sort of guaranteed protective covering against suffering.
Yeah.
And so then I've never even heard of anybody going deaf at 26 years old ever. So to me, this was a suffering so out of blue. It wasn't part of our family history. There was no preparation for it. To me, it just seemed like an assault on myself. Yeah. So of course, God would heal me. Mm. So right after the initial grief, immediately I started praying for healing and asking people to pray for healing for me, and really just convinced myself I'd be the poster child for healing.
Yeah.
Because I would be able to say, look at me, I have done everything I can to do life right, to be righteous, to not do the bad things, and to really discipline myself to do the good things. And look, God has blessed me because, look, I was diagnosed with this and now I'm healed. And if you would just follow all those rules too, you'd be great.
Which really now we call the prosperity gospel.
We do.
And we all kind of can scoff at it at times and say, you know, oh, that's, I won't say the name of the pastor who does that. But, you know, if we just do all the right things, God wants to make you wealthy, you know. But really, that's the same theology.
And it's a
lie. That so many of us believe without trying to believe it or realize that we do, because I think it bleeds so heavily into culture. Well, you work hard, you get the college degree, you save right, and you do all these things, and you get the bigger house, and you get the life you always wanted, and you get to do whatever you want and not work. You know, that's like this idea that we think that's how it should go, which really is this illusion of control that we think we have over how God should do it or how life should work. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so much of it is unintentional, right? It's not that our parents sat us down and said, this is how the world works, and therefore we believe it. It's just kind of this subtle thing that we pick up and we think, well, I'm a good person. I'm not that person over there who's angry and mad, or so things should go well, right?
Yes.
Like we're fed this, and so therefore we believe it. There's actually a really great book. I might butcher the title, but I just read it and it's really good. It's kind of a memoir of a woman who actually was a professor studying the prosperity gospel, did like her whole dissertation on it. And then she got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and she had like a 1-year-old baby. And it's called Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved. And it's just story after story of how that theology was just kind of wrecked for her the moment she got cancer. Anyway, it's a great book. Go read it. But okay, so you're kind of believing this. You're saying, well, God's going to heal me. Of course. And then you had the elders of the church pray for you.
Okay, right? But before this, one thing I do want to note, the church that I was going to was really a great Bible teaching church. Did not teach what I espoused. I put it together more from pop theology, more the kinds of things that people say in the moment. God, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a really popular one. Or God's got this. Well, yes. Yes and no.
Yeah.
Or this is God's plan for your life. Or none of that was taught
or
in my church.
God saw this coming. I've heard that one a lot. Yeah.
Which is true. And I can actually go back and realize that just a couple of months before my diagnosis, I had cried out to God and said, I want more. As I'd seen a few women in my life who seemed to have this intimate walk with God. And I knew mine wasn't intimate like this. So I'd cried out to God for this intimacy that actually did come eventually.
Because suffering and pain and loss is always the catalyst for growth.
Yes.
It's just that is what grows us. It's not life going perfectly that grows us.
Right. Yeah. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
But I still don't believe that this was an answer to that prayer.
Yes.
And many people will say to you, be careful what you pray for.
Yes.
And I just say, no, he's your father, a good, good father. Never be careful what we pray for. Pour our hearts out to him. He bends down to listen, the psalmist says. So I don't believe it was a result of that prayer. But
well,
it does make me realize that God was already preparing me for what may be ahead.
Well, let's take a little rabbit trail before we continue in your story, because I think this is important, because I think that there's a lot of confusion, and rightly so, and I think we'll never know for sure and have all the answers this side of heaven, but of like, well, why do bad things happen to good people? Why does God allow suffering? You hear a lot of people say, if he's all powerful, why doesn't he stop it? You know, I think there's a lot of confusion, and there are questions we need to ask. Mm-hmm. Just stuffing it and saying, well, I don't know, it doesn't matter, or I'll never know, doesn't help us.
No.
But can you talk about that for a minute? Like, what have you kind of found to be true in the scriptures? Just talk to us about that.
So in the middle of this, I went on the first ever real intensive study of something in the scriptures on my own, because I could see that there was such a wide field of belief about suffering, and I needed to understand this myself.
Yeah.
And so I did a ton of study, and really the stories that informed my theology and suffering had to do, every single one of them, with when God doesn't intervene. You know, it's not shocking to us that we get stage 4 cancer or go deaf. It's shocking to us that God doesn't heal us in the midst of it. And unfortunately, in my case, because I was not in any way prepared with my own theology of suffering, I was still a fairly new Christian. I first heard the gospel when I was 15, and by this time, you know, this is just barely 10 years later.
Yeah.
I didn't have a solid, this is what I believe about suffering. So I'm formulating my theology of suffering while I'm suffering,
and that
is not a good way to go, which is why we're talking about this on the Intentional Parents podcast, because I believe that this is something that parents could do for their children. If you have helped your children to develop a solid theology of suffering, then they're not wrestling with some of the things that sank me during that time.
Yes, which we're going to talk more about.
Yes.
Towards the end of this episode. And don't let that word theology of suffering scare you. I think it sounds beautiful, but it doesn't mean you have to know all the theological things. It's just giving our kids, I don't know, maybe a less intimidating way to say it is an awareness that suffering happens and an awareness of who God is in the midst of suffering to us.
Yeah.
Because then they're not surprised when it happens to them, because it will in some way, shape, or form, or it will to people really close to them, and they're going to have to walk with people through that. And if we don't know who God is or where to go to him or what even scriptures to cling to, then we're lost in the midst of it when it happens, not if. So we're going to get to more of that and how that applies to your kids as we keep talking.
And that's really what theology is. It's a study of God. So you nailed it when you said, if we don't know who God is.
Yeah.
I didn't have a real solid understanding of who God is. I had more of my make-believe version, like I already told you, of this benevolent father who would take care of me and protect me from bad things.
Yeah.
And just loved me and all of which is true.
I was going to say, all of which is true, but there's more. Yeah.
There's more to the story. In fact, Jesus was saying, talking to his disciples right before they would go through a tremendous suffering that they were not facing very well themselves when Jesus would go to the cross. They were still clinging to the belief that he was going to garner all these soldiers around him. They were going to overcome the oppression that they were living under. And he can see that they're not really listening very well. And in John 16, he says, I've told you all this so that you may have peace in me. So peace in the midst of the suffering. Here on earth, you will have many trials and sorrows. But take heart, because I have overcome the world. I just managed to only hear that Jesus had overcome the world and not to pay attention to, you will have many trials and sorrows.
Yeah, we gloss over that one.
Yes.
But so, take heart. Yeah.
In the midst of it, I began to learn that in reality, Genesis 1 and 2 is God's plan A, as we used to say back then, for our lives. We were born for Eden.
Yes.
We were born for intimacy with God, for intimacy with each other, for no suffering, no pain, no sorrow, no stress. Mm-hmm. We were born to the calling of our lives of caring for the earth. And then in Genesis 3, the fall happens. Mm-hmm. And everything after that is no longer God's perfect will for my life.
No.
God meant for me to hear. He means for me to hear right now. Mm-hmm. But that ended, that possibility of everything being perfect ended with the fall, that our choice to try to live our own way.
Yeah.
I believe now that the DNA, that the sin that wrecked and does wreck our relationships and created distance between us and God also entered into our DNA.
Yeah.
And it was inevitable that cancers and Matthew, your brother's diabetes, and the struggles that your daughter has gone through, and all these different things happen, go wrong with our bodies, because that is still a result of the fall. So I do not believe that God wanted me to go deaf.
No.
But neither did he choose to heal me.
Yeah.
And there is that tension of, if he really loved me, wouldn't he heal me?
Yeah.
And I think we carry that tension right up until the day we die, because all of us are going to be to die, and we're not going to be healed at some point. And that's that tension that, as you know who God is, that he actually grieves with us and is present with us in the middle of our sorrows. It just takes on a whole different look to us. That he says in John 14, I think it is, or let's see, let me see it right here. It's just been really catching me. John 14, 18, there's a little phrase that just has been catching me lately, because Jesus again is telling his followers that he's going away. And then repeatedly, he says, I will come to you. I will come to you. I will come to you. I will come and get you, so that you will always be with me where I am. So what he really gives us in response is his presence.
Yes. Which is just a beautiful gift that I just think, when we can see that mystery for what it is and not trying to dissect it as black and white, you know, and there's so much, like you said, this side of heaven, there's so much that we're not going to fully understand the why behind everything. Mm-hmm. And it's good to question it, I think, absolutely. But there's a point where we have to say, I surrender the why. I don't, I'm never going to fully know.
Yeah.
Or why some people suffer so much more than others, or, you know, so much nuance in there. But I think when we experience suffering, and we get to experience who God is to us in the midst of that, and that he can and does so often turn the most horrible things into something that only he could turn to something beautiful. And I think I misunderstood that for so long of, you know, that verse in Romans that that God works 8, all things together for the good of those who love him. I took, as you were explaining, I kind of in the back of my mind thought, well, we do everything that he wants us to do. We follow him. We're Christians. We're good people. And then he makes our lives according to how he wanted them, which was totally off theology. And the more that I've lived and the more that I've walked through suffering, the more I've seen, no, that's how incredibly gracious and powerful God is, that he can take the worst thing and has the power to turn it into something beautiful. He can take the most awful sinfulness or evil act of somebody else or sickness, and he has the power to do something beautiful with it, which is just, that's redemption, right? That's who he is.
And it never stops.
No.
You know, I think we also got caught in the thinking that redemption is a one-time thing.
No.
I pray a prayer and I'm redeemed. The reality is I'll be being redeemed until the last, until I see him face to face.
And everything, art and creation, and all of those things.
Yes.
I even think of like the beauty and the creativity of when somebody takes a house that is falling apart, or even your house. Your house was gross, was smelled terrible. Like cat pee, not a nice house.
Yes.
And slowly over time, you guys have turned it into, you call it your cottage, but it's this beautiful home that's taken time and creativity. But like that's, God does even that.
Yes.
And even gave you guys the creativity to do that. And I just love that. But that wasn't, so back to your story.
So back to my story.
That took a long time, years and years and years and years of being able to see all the good and the redemption that God was doing.
Yes. And I couldn't see the good until I hit a crisis.
Yes.
And the crisis was good for me, as awful as it was. For me, what happened is, as over time, God didn't heal my hearing. In fact, in the first 2 years, 3 years, I lost almost all of my hearing. So I was losing it at an unbelievably rapid pace. I mean, I just felt like I couldn't catch my breath.
Yeah.
Because you adapt in order to understand language and speech. You adapt to use other means to understand lip reading and context and all that. But it was going so fast, I couldn't keep up. And it was terrifying. And so he wasn't healing me. In fact, at one point, the doctor said, you're going to be completely deaf in 5 years. So what do we need to do? And I turned to anger.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't God heal me? And the conclusion over many months of very internal grieving that you know now more about grieving than I have ever learned, I think. But the fact is, we were not living in a Christian culture that allowed for me to grieve what was wrong. Mm. There was something wrong, wrong happening to me, that I was losing this vital sense. And my fears had to do largely with my relationships. I really didn't care that I couldn't hear birds or frogs or alarms. But I thought, I'm raising these little children. I'm a first generation Christian now, though my parents had just given their life to the Lord. How in the world am I going to raise Jesus followers if they can't talk to me?
Yeah.
If I couldn't figure out how that would work. So I was really afraid of a future of silence. And that turned into more and more anger, God, and basically coming to the conclusion inside of me that, number one, God was not listening to me because I was crying out and begging and praying like crazy. And number two, that he must not be good. That I knew he could heal my ears, my hearing. That didn't take any faith from me. And then, of course, there's the unfortunate things that people say, really meaning well, not knowing how to face their own sorrow in the face of my sorrow.
Yeah.
And so they would say some things that made me just hate God, really, honestly. On the outside, I'm playing the perfect pastor's wife. On the inside, I'm raging against God, and not saying it, not because I didn't dare say it, not saying it because I didn't want anybody to correct me and to say, Diane, don't think like that.
Yeah.
Because that's what it seems like everybody always was saying to anybody who got off, and I was off.
Yeah.
And basically, I was rejecting God more and more and more. I was reading my Bible one day out on the back deck of our house in Aptos, California, overlooking the ocean. And it's a Sunday afternoon, and the kids had gone down for a nap. And I'm reading my Bible because of the rage going in me, and I've got to find some answers. And I'm reading in the Gospels. And I got so mad at Jesus at one point that I threw my Bible across the deck. A throw of the big black Bible. Just so angry at who Jesus seemed to be in that moment.
Mm.
Well, you know, I went over and picked up my Bible, and my temper tantrum eased, but it really was beginning to separate me from God. So much so that when Phil, your dad, asked me to, what would I think of going to the elders of our church and asking for them to pray over me and anoint me with oil, which is found in James chapter 5? Would I consider doing that? And I said, yes, yeah, I think I want to do that. But inside, I was thinking, okay, he isn't hearing me. He's not listening to me. Mm. He must not like me very much. But these men, I know they're really righteous men. They're really godly. And so maybe he'll listen to them. And then worse, on my way to church that Sunday night when I knew they were going to pray for me, I, inside of myself, said to God, okay, this is it. I'm exhausted from praying so hard. This is just, this battle's awful. If you don't listen to them, I'm done. I'm done with you. I'm done with God. I'm just done. And now I look back and think, had I followed through on that? Had God not intervened? Had I not heard?
Yeah.
What would have happened to our family?
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't even begin to imagine. Actually, I can begin to imagine, and that terrifies me.
Yeah.
So we went to church, and these men were just a varied group of people, not like a board of directors of a successful company. The pastor had chosen wisely men who were just men of spiritual and relational depth and sensitivity and responsiveness. Mm-hmm. One was a construction guy. Another was a wrestling coach at the local high school. Another one was a businessman. So just this variety of men that I actually just felt I could entrust my future to these men. They're friends of ours, because my husband was, Phil was a worship pastor at the church. And they got together in a little cinder block room in an old church building and put their chairs around in a circle and just began to ask me questions, first of all. And about the losing my hearing, about what the doctor was saying, what the prognosis was, which was continued hearing loss. And then one pastor, our pastor of counseling, asked me, Diane, is there any sin in your life? Because it is actually true that you can find at the root of some difficulties that happen in our lives that sin can cause. Mm-hmm. Or could open us up to suffering.
Yeah.
And I remember inside being so indignant. How dare he suggest that there was sin in my life and that this could possibly be a result of sin in my life. But it's right there in James chapter 5. So, yeah. Of course, being the good Christian woman, I thought all that. And bristled.
And didn't say anything.
Stiffened up. And just said, not that I know of, not that I'm aware of. Interesting. Months later, I was listening to a message and from a woman. And the woman was naming self-pity as a sin. And it was like God shone a light on it. And that was actually true in my life. There was at the root of the anger and the depression that came with it, a root of self-pity.
Yeah.
But I'd never thought of that as
no.
a sin.
No, yeah.
I mean, my self-pity was raging. Once Phil said to me, oh, it's okay, Di. It's not like you're dying of cancer or anything. I tell you what, I'm not sure I've forgiven him yet for that one.
Yep,
self-pity was just right there, right in my face. And I was very self-righteously denying it. But so the men prayed for me. They anointed me with just, you know, grocery store olive oil. I think it was. It was no big deal. And it was beautiful, still the most beautiful glory comes to mind of a prayer meeting. I'm sobbing quietly, trying so hard not to cry, but I was just sobbing, my blouse being wet with tears. And in the middle of them praying for me, all of a sudden, now you have to understand, I am not a charismatic background. I can be very skeptical of anybody showing too much emotion, and I'm just steady Eddie. You know,
yeah.
I just have often said boring is my middle name. I just don't go way up or go way down. So I'm in the middle of this prayer meeting, and all of a sudden, best words I can use to describe it is just this light flooded me. almost like you see over, we're driving through the Willamette Valley in Oregon, and it's stormy and dark clouds. And all of a sudden the clouds open and the light just looks like it's streaming through and hitting the ground. That's how I saw something like that is all I can say. It just seemed like the most real thing in the world to me in the moment. And later I read in 2 Timothy that actually that God dwells on a throne of light. Mm. Now I believe that I got the teeniest, tiniest glimpse, and that's all it took.
Yeah.
And I'm flooded with light and warmth and feeling the love of God in a way I never have experienced before. And I hear two words. Now, I'd never heard words from God before, impressions. But this felt like it seemed like words to me.
Yeah.
And it was just two words. It's okay. And my name, Di. It's okay. Over and over again. It's okay. It's okay. And not reassuring like a mom reassuring her child, but more like my dad, whose reassurance was more stern. It's okay. Diane.
Like a powerful, with authority behind
it. Okay. Yes, sir, kind of a response.
Yeah.
And I knew in the moment that he was saying no to healing. I've never dared ask for healing since, because I really believe it would be an affront to him since. Because I felt like he was saying to me so strongly is, I'm with you in this.
Yeah.
It's okay. I'm not going to heal you. Trust me. And as strange as it may sound to go in so entitled, so full of self-pity, so angry, so, you know, giving ultimatums.
Yeah.
Within moments, it was just completely okay with me. And has been, honestly, that the grieving continues ever since that moment. He healed something broken in me. And I can't wait to hear him tell me exactly what psychologists, maybe they could tell me, but something broken in me was healed instantly. And I have not ever been the same person.
No.
And we went out of that prayer meeting knowing I knew I wasn't going to be healed, but it was just very polite. You know, I was still at that time of my life, didn't know how to be very honest. Therefore, I was pretty clammed up. Went home, put the kids to bed, and got up the next morning and opened my Bible to Psalm 40, which is just a beautiful psalm. I always say it's my psalm, but I have since learned lots of people claim that it's their psalm. And heard God speaking to me in a way that I've never heard him speak before. And I had gotten up especially early knowing that if I didn't, the kids would, you know, take over my life. You know, and it says in Psalm 40, I waited patiently for the Lord to help me. And in the margin of the Bible that I was using at the time, it says that patiently means intently. So I waited intently for the Lord to help me. And he turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the pit of despair, out of the mud and the mire. He set my feet on solid ground and steadied me as I walked along. He has given me a new song to sing, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see what he has done and be astounded. They will put their trust in the Lord. Oh, the joys of those who trust the Lord, who have no confidence in the proud. And then down in verse 6, you take no delight in sacrifices or offerings, which was my approach.
Yeah.
Do all the right stuff.
Yeah.
Don't do all the bad stuff. Sacrifices and offerings. And then he says in the version I was reading at the time, New American Standard, it says, my ears thou hast opened.
Wow.
And my heart just caught like, oh, did I hear wrong? And so I tapped something to see if I could hear it. And sure enough, it was just a dull thud.
Yeah.
And in the New Living that I'm reading right now, it says, now that you have made me listen, I finally understand. So really the next morning is where I felt the Lord speaking to me and saying, Diane, you have been in this amazing church, all this teaching. You've heard some of the best teachers from all over the United States come to this church. Now is when the rubber meets the road. Mm. Now will you do what I tell you to do? And so there was the surrender.
Yeah.
That I think is essential when you're really suffering, is that surrender of not insisting that God do things my way.
Yeah.
Or the way that would seem best to pretty much anybody. But I really surrender and let God do what he was going to do in my life and in my heart.
Wow. I mean, I just think that's so beautiful. And you can just see, like, you went in one way with one mm-hmm. theology with mm-hmm. I'm doing all the right things, and therefore mm-hmm. God's going to do these things. Mm-hmm. And you went out with God having a power over you that mm-hmm. he didn't have before. Mm-hmm. And what it did was open your ears to actually hear him speak
yes.
to you.
Yes.
And man, but you also said you continued grieving. It wasn't like
yes.
you went in and you weren't fine and you came out and now you were all of a sudden
no.
fine.
No.
It was years of losing more and more mm-hmm. and more hearing after that mm-hmm. and more and years of God speaking to you mm-hmm. and uncovering mm-hmm. layers and growing yes. you. Like it wasn't just
no.
this linear.
No.
In one day, then I was fine.
Yes. I would say in one day I was rescued from the pit of
yes.
destruction.
Yes.
But then it's like I had to learn I was starting at the very beginning. I had to learn from him. Who is God? What are his ways? How does he love me? Who am I?
Yeah.
There was so much to learn from that. And really, I would say, you know, when people almost want to insist that you thank God for any bad thing that happens to you instantly, mm-hmm. I think there's truth in that. You can be thankful for what's happening in your life as a result of that.
Yeah.
But it took me a good 20, maybe more, years for me to actually be able to say what I can say today, which is, I'm so glad that I went deaf. Mm. I'm so thankful because what is the good he has carved in me and in the lives of my family as a result of it are worth the pain. But honestly, to say that honestly took me yeah. at least 20 years.
And I think that's important. It's so important. And I think yeah. it's so relieving mm-hmm. to the person who's listening, who's like, well, I'm a year in and I am uh-huh. trying real hard to fight for that positivity and to see that good, but I don't actually feel that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think mm-hmm. just to give hope of it took 20, 30 years
yeah.
and now mm-hmm. you can say it wholeheartedly mm-hmm. and you're helping so mm-hmm. many people just wherever they're at in the journey, mm-hmm. if they're stuck mm-hmm. in anger and frustration mm-hmm. towards God, or really what I see is that was the moment you began a partnership with God,
yeah.
where okay. God was always there offering that to you, mm-hmm. but you didn't know how to access it. Mm-mm. You didn't know that's who he was.
Nope.
And you got to experience God with you
mm-hmm.
in all of it and grieving with you and going on that journey with you. You haven't been on that journey for 20, 30 years by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
He's been guiding
exactly.
you and leading you through that. And I think mm-hmm. that should just give all of us so much hope of grief and suffering
yeah.
and loss is not linear and it can't
no.
be rushed.
No.
And it's not the same for me as it is for you
no.
or as it is for somebody else,
mm-hmm.
you know? And for some people it's faster and for some people it's way longer and
mm-hmm.
and some of us are stuck in anger longer. Like it's, you know.
And some people just stay oblivious to it. They
yes.
don't know what's wrong.
Yes.
But they have almost anesthetized themselves to the feelings of pain. And so they live in a constant state of low-level anxiety,
yes.
which comes out as irritation
yes.
or intolerance or rigidity. All because you haven't grieved deeply.
Yes.
I think we were talking just a few minutes ago, Elizabeth, about a lament.
Yes.
You know, Lamentations, a whole book of the Bible. We are actually invited by God. David in the Psalms laments.
Yes.
Brutally, honestly, not always theologically correctly.
Yes.
You know, God, come down and light my enemies on fire,
mm-hmm.
you know. Lamenting and expressing our grief
yeah.
over what should not be.
Yes.
And
it
will
that
not be,
has to come before
it does.
We can get to the God is faithful, God is good. I mean, he
yes.
is in the midst of all of that.
Yes.
But if we skip over those feelings and that lamenting
yes.
and that honesty with God, we can't ever actually
yes.
get to the growth. And I was just listening to a Pete Scazzaro podcast. He has the Emotionally Healthy Leader, I think is his podcast. And he was talking about seasons and, you know, just with all everything that's happening in the world and COVID-19, he was saying it's a winter season. And he was talking about how winter is a death.
Yeah.
And it's where everything is dying. Even fall, he was saying fall is like the preparation for winter, which is the death. Fall is beautiful. We see all the leaves changing, but it's because they're all about to die. And, you know, we're not, and in winter, there isn't produce. We're not producing crops. You know, lots of like agricultural analogies in the Bible. But he was talking about how scripture is so clear about there is a season for everything. And we want to live in spring and summer all the time.
All the time.
And our culture does. Yeah. He said that. We want to be producing. We want it to be fruitful and fun and positive and light-filled. But we can't have the spring and the summer without fall and winter.
Yes.
And you can't just have fall that's kind of pretty, but yeah, maybe things are dying and skips straight to spring and summer where there's produce. In order for there to be something fruitful, we have to go through winter. And I think that lament is so much like that.
It is. Of,
it's so important. We can't skip it. And if we do, like you said, all these other things start to pop up. It has to come out somewhere.
Yes.
And it comes out different for all of us. But I think if we ever want to have that depth and that deep root that grows in the Lord, we can't just live in spring and summer. Everything's going to be okay all the time. But it's messy, right?
It's messy and you can get stuck.
Yes.
And we've all seen people who almost become, their identity becomes as a sufferer.
Yeah.
And you know what? When you're suffering, you get a lot of attention, especially from women. You get a lot of empathy and sympathy. And if you, and if you're not careful, you can get stuck. You can almost make a safe little world in your suffering that identifies who you are. And that is so unhealthy. So, you know, just like so many things in life, lamenting is really good and really important. You can't put a time frame on it. But there needs to be an eventual I'm growing out of it. And in my case, I feel like there was the stage when the elders prayed for me and the surrender. But then it was, I used to say that once a month on my cycle, I grieved the loss of my hearing. Because those would be the times, you know, when you're feeling especially tender emotionally are the times that the things come back up again. And even that is good because then you look at them and you say, yes, for the last many days, I've been living a life that God never intended me to be. I function in a hearing world as a deaf woman and it's hard. And I have to still remind myself, I now wear a cochlear implant, which is amazing and miraculous, a computer device that I take on and off, attaches to my head with a magnet, bypasses my ear entirely, and makes my brain record what I hear.
Yeah, it's amazing.
In short talk, it is amazing. And it's still not real hearing.
No, sounds
so
like a computer.
I still have to remind myself, I'll get mad at myself for being so tired after maybe a day of doing podcasts or meetings or needing to wear my cochlear all the time. I'll be exhausted and think, what is wrong with me? I should be higher energy than this. And I realize, no, I'm deaf.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's hard to hear.
Yeah.
And that wears me out faster than other people. And then I just, it's actually good to remember some of the things that some trials will go away. And you look at it and you say, it was like a storm blew through. You know, we're sitting here in the forest. We had a storm just a few days ago and it blew the trees all over and everything fell off the trees. All the dead leaves fell off the trees and refreshed the forest. It's beautiful. Some storms like that, they blow through our lives and God cleans up some things or redirects us. But some are here to stay.
Yeah.
My deafness was the first ever storm in my life that is to stay.
Yeah.
And most people end up with some sort of, sometimes that storm is a really difficult marriage that is just not going to get better instantly. Or a child who's just hard.
Yeah.
Insists on being hard, breaking our heart hard. Or in this time, finances, all the goals that you had financially, you're set back the next 10 years. You don't know how you're going to pay off your student loans. Some of those are long-term kind of hard storms that we all endure. And that's what it was for me.
Yeah. Now, let's talk for a minute before we end. You know, our whole kind of conversation before this and goal of even doing this episode was just recognizing you've learned through this the importance of teaching our kids what we talked about, a theology of suffering, because you didn't have one going into this. And, you know, you said first generation Christian, your parents didn't have one. No one, this is not something that's even taught in the church, really. I mean, not it's maybe a little more now than it used to be, but not a lot. And, you know, that has turned into becoming a passion of yours of just giving our kids this foundation and this understanding of who God is when those things come, because it will come, you know? And so tell us about that. How do you do that? Where, if so, say somebody's listening and they're like, okay, I'm becoming aware to my own suffering that I've maybe suppressed, or I'm tracking with what you're saying. I've been processing this with God. How do they share that with their kids? And how do they help give their kids that foundation?
Well, I think maybe you could answer this better than me, because I didn't know what I was doing when I was sharing with you my kids. You know, I had these young children. I was going deaf. They understood. And you all probably took it a little differently. John Mark remembers a lot of fear.
Yeah.
Because he was overhearing conversations that just felt threatening to him. And that's all he knew. Whereas you were too young for that fear. But all of you grew up knowing that, you know, once a year I'd go into the audiologist and my hearing would always be worse and I would always cry for a couple of days and then be okay. So, but what I, the main thing that, the number one thing to teach your kids about suffering is that God is with you in the midst of suffering. And that just sounds like, that just sounds like a factual statement, but he's with you in a felt sense.
Yeah.
And suffering is very lonely. So as much as my husband, Phil, is an empathetic person, he's quick to jump all the way into the story. Didn't stonewall. I don't think Phil's ever stonewalled me ever. He still couldn't enter into my suffering. He couldn't help but make a little bit light of it, because he was seeing it in the context of life. In the moment, I didn't want it. I wanted it to be as much of a crisis to him as it was to me. And I learned early that he couldn't take my suffering from me. So there's a loneliness in that. But when we grab hold of the presence of Christ, of Jesus with me, when we actually teach our kids, God grieves with you. He's shedding tears for you, like he shed tears for when his friend Lazarus died. He wasn't shedding tears for Lazarus. He was shedding tears for Mary and Martha, his sisters who loved him and whose lives depended on this male figure in their home to take care of them.
And he's grieving. What I love about that is he stopped and he grieved with them.
Yes.
Was present with them, knowing that he was going to raise him from the dead.
Yes.
He could have said, oh, you don't need to be sad. No. I'm going to raise him from the dead.
Yes.
And I just, I take that as there has to be, there's a clear message for us in that. Yeah. That it's okay to grieve. It's normal to grieve. It's good to grieve, that God stops and grieves with us.
Yes.
And he can see something on the other side of it that we yet can't see.
And he still doesn't.
And he doesn't always tell us.
Yes.
Most of the time he doesn't tell us.
He doesn't.
You know?
Yeah. But he does tell us to trust him.
Yes.
We must trust him to navigate this with us rather than insist on he must heal me.
Yes.
Years later, a neighbor, a woman I loved and walked with, who had a genuine walk with God, tried to talk me into going to a healer who was coming into town. I finally had to say, you know, with God, it's been so clear to me that it would be disobedience for me to go and ask a healer to do what God himself has said he's not going to do to me. That's important even to tell to our children. God is with you in it. Be careful about listening to all the other voices that would suggest that maybe that God expects you to have something called faith, which is often defined as an emotion that you can drum up. If I can drum up enough emotion to believe, to have faith, not only that God can heal me, but that he will and that he must and he promised he would.
Like the power lies in us.
Exactly. Yeah. That is just not true. And it is a works-based theology that I've seen so many people see their faith crash and burn when things don't turn out the way our faith is supposed to make them happen.
Yeah.
What I discovered in the midst of this is real faith happens and is sustaining when in the midst of hard things, you can say, I know this is awful. This is hard. This should not be. But God is good in the midst of it.
And that he's good if he heals me, and he's good if he doesn't. And that doesn't mean we don't have hope for the healing, because oftentimes God does heal.
Often.
And there are so many miracle stories. And oftentimes he uses men of, and women of great faith and of prayer. And so often he does. But it, if he chooses or if he doesn't or if things continue to get worse or whatever it might be, he's still the same.
He's the same.
He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. Like, I think that's where sometimes we feel like our faith is emotional. Like you said, this emotion we drum up. And it's we have strong faith if he's doing everything we asked him to do. And we have weak faith if it's not working out how we'd hoped. But I think that's such a powerful message to give our kids, is to not, we don't need to shield them from the hard things in our lives. Obviously, there's some details we share shield them from when it's not appropriate to share with them. But to be able, for us to be able to see you cry after the audiologist and for you to tell us why you were sad and what was actually going on. But then you were constantly sharing with us the scriptures that God gave. You weren't trying to teach us. You just were honest as you did it. And I think for me, how that like built so much just faith and trust and understanding of suffering in my own life was just watching you live it without, I mean, this might sound weird, but without drama or like, but just live it honestly. Of just today I'm sad and here's why. But look at, look what God told me in his word. Look how he spoke to me. And he just shared it with us along the way so that when suffering hit my own life, it was not a shock even in the least bit. Nor was I fearful of, oh, there's suffering around the bend because suffering happened to my mom. But I personally didn't feel the need to question God or be mad at God. Or now learning to grieve, that's a whole other story, a whole episode for another time. That I was really ill prepared for. And I think so many of us are. And that wasn't because you didn't grieve. I just think I was really ill prepared for it. But suffering itself was not a shock or a surprise. And I think there's a way that we can just talk to our kids honestly.
Just bring them into the story. That's all I think that we have to do, is just pull them up on your lap when you're sitting on the sofa with your Bible and you're reading something beautiful and say, look what I just saw in God's word. Isn't this beautiful, Elizabeth? Isn't, isn't amazing how he's present with us in hard things? Or in a hard situation, do you remember when we used to go to the grocery store? And you were with me. And they didn't used to have the digital, you know, where the prices or or the total wouldn't show on a screen. That the cashier would tell you, you know, I had four kids, family of six, so $103.49. And they don't necessarily look at you, so I couldn't lip read. They say it real fast and they're looking down, and I just be like, I mean, how
and
much?
And no debit cards. You'd have to write a check.
Yes, you had to write a check. You had to write a check. And so you kids would see my blank face, or I would ask a couple more times, what, what? Because it took a long time for me to admit that I was deaf. Just a long time for me to even say, excuse me, I am hard of hearing. You know, because here I am, this young woman, not even 30 yet. Excuse me, I'm hard of hearing. Can you repeat that again? It took me a long time. So there's some pride. But then you guys would have to cover for me. And you would say, Mom, $103.49. And get the funny look from the cashier. And you can't tell the whole story every time. That is bringing your kids along in your suffering too. Not you almost had a role to play.
We were all a team in helping you. And we knew that whether we wanted to or not. Like, we just did. It wasn't, it's just what you do as a family. That's you rallied together. It wasn't just you going deaf. No. It was our whole
family. It affects your whole family.
Yeah.
And I think because we, maybe it was your dad who kind of made that become a whole family thing. I never felt completely alone in it.
Yeah.
But neither did I get to completely dependent on you. I mean, as long as I could, I used the phone. And then there came a point where I couldn't use the phone anymore. You had to make all my phone calls. I remember when Matthew was really pretty young and you guys were all in high school and saying, and I needed to make a hair appointment to get my hair cut. Dad's at work saying, okay, lower your voice, Matthew. Sound older because you need to make this haircut appointment for me, you know? And that's where the family really rallied and it was a team. Suffering, just don't hide your suffering from your kids. Talk easily about your grief without drama. The limitations in my life, the way those limitations affected you. You really just, it's not like you're trying to teach them a linear, these are six things. But then also make sure that you hear them in their small sufferings, that you're listening to make sure that their thinking is correct. Because that's our practice, you know?
Yeah.
When one of the girls at the barn, remember we had a barn behind our house that was kind of a place where we could ride horses. When one of the girls at the barn would be really mean and rejecting to you. Mm-hmm. It was really important that you understand that God was with you and sorrowing for you as you hurt over that girl being mean to you. Those are the practices that we get with our kids, where you understand that bad things happen that God never intended to happen to you, but somehow they still happen. It doesn't mean that God has lost control, but it also means that God does not have absolute control over every bad thing that happens to you. That choice got made in Genesis 3 that unleashed evil that he never intended. And because he loves us so much, he wants us to have so much freedom to love him back that he hasn't made us these little robots who live the perfect life. Those little things, that can be taught when somebody's so just mean and rejecting.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, we need to wrap up, but what would you, just kind of as we end, what would you say to the parent or man or woman listening who is maybe just, I don't know, maybe in the middle of suffering, maybe just beginning to question where is God in all of this? Where do I start? Or maybe somebody who's stuck in the really hard parts of suffering, and they're hearing your story of hope, because really yours is a tragically beautiful story, you know, not something you ever would have chosen, but something that has literally shaped your life in a powerful and beautiful, meaningful way. What would you say to the person who feels stuck or is in the thick of that, that maybe would leave them with some hope and maybe some direction on where to look to God?
I think just knowing that you're stuck, sensing that you're stuck, being honest with yourself and not faking it is step number one. Once you've got to that point and you've faced it, you're halfway there. And then I think two things that I would say. First of all, delve into the scriptures, the gospels, maybe John 14, 15, 16, 17. Those are just beautiful. The Psalms.
Yeah.
Ask God to make his presence known to you and open your heart, open your emotions to the possibility of a sense of his withness with you. Okay, this also takes practice, which is what the spiritual practices are for, spiritual disciplines of getting up early to read your Bible. But you're not reading your Bible to check it off the list. You're reading because you need to listen. You need to hear from God. Journaling. Silence and solitude, the different spiritual disciplines for different things, but you need to open your heart into a connection with God that is felt in your life. And then on the other hand, if you can find a mentor who's been there, who's walked that road, who you sense that she has or he has an intimacy with God, and that they may be able to kind of be a little bit of a spiritual director for you. Now go here, yeah. Now go here, now go there. We're not meant to do all this alone. And and that, I wish I had understood that. I'm an introvert.
Yeah,
I was trained to not give my troubles, tell my troubles to others. I'm nine on the Enneagram, which is, you know, you would never tell anybody your troubles. but that's a mistake. We need to be not just gabbing to our friends. We need to find somebody wiser, older, having walked ahead of us to be able to walk with us through it. Sometimes that's a good counselor who is a believer and follower of Jesus. But often that is just a woman who is, who's endured more than you have and who can just get you a little further for the times that you're stuck. Yeah.
Brooke calls them spiritual Sherpas. He said, just somebody who knows the path before you, knows the path of suffering, and who can just be a guide, who can just walk a few steps ahead of you and say.
Oh, and sometimes they're not people as in flesh and blood people. I read Amy Carmichael. She was my favorite to read during that time. I read all sorts of books on suffering, but her one book, Rose from Briar, just resonated with me. And then her devotionals, she was just a real woman who was suffering at during World War II as a missionary in India. Something about her personality, her way of putting things, just resonated with me. And others I read at the time, C.S. Lewis didn't do a thing for me. And now people just, and I love C.S. Lewis now, but at the time, it was just, he was a little bit too blunt and factual for me. So your mentors can be books, which is one of the reasons I wrote my story, really. Honestly, I wrote it for two reasons. Number one, I just felt like that was overflowing with, I needed to be put on paper what I had learned. Number two, I wanted you kids to hear the whole story. Because I knew you would have suffering in your lives. And honestly, as much as I was open with you, I shielded you age appropriately from how hard it really was. I needed you to hear how far I went away from God and how gracefully he brought me back to himself. And I also needed you just to learn the lessons along the way with me. I wanted you to learn the lessons along the way with me.
Well, I'm so thankful that you took us on that journey with you. And I'm so thankful that you wrote your story to be able to, and it really is a story. Like it's a book full of stories and how God met you just weaved through it all. And so I can't recommend her book enough. And I got to live it with her and every word is true. It's not, there's no pretend. There's no put on a smile and everything is perfect. It's just real and honest, and I think just gives people a lot of hope. So again, we'll link that in the show notes. But thank you, Mom, so much.
Thanks,
Elizabeth. For just talking with me. I love that I get to do this with you and just sharing your journey and your wisdom with everybody listening.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.